been a very strange week, to say the least. And for us just to say, okay, we're going to 1 Corinthians chapter 2, and just put blinders on, ignore the world, I think it's kind of an ignorant way of teaching the scriptures in a practical way. And I just thought, Al and I were talking to this week when we got together, and we thought, a lot of us got a chance to digest some of the things that happened in New York with this tragedy through the media, what it feeds us. Sometimes some of us got a chance to talk with people who we work with. A few of us got to digest it praying with some other Christians when we had time for 5, 10, 20 minutes. We may have not all had an opportunity to digest the process, some of the things going on with other Christians here at Mid-County here. And I thought, you know, this might be an opportunity. This take 15, 20 minutes and let's just open it up, whatever you guys feel, whatever hits you, whatever is on your hearts. Let's open it up and let's minister to each other and learn how, through this tragic world, how we can continue to love and press on and in our faith. And also, I just want to encourage you, like I mentioned last week, that Wednesday night small groups are coming up, and I think just about everybody here is in one, but if you don't see one, that's a great opportunity to process difficult events in our life, good and bad, like this. And in addition, I want to bring up, too, that something that's been on my heart, so I've read a lot about in the last year or two, that man is made, mankind has a multidimensional side to us. Some of us men are the most guilty of anybody to grab hold on the analytical, factual, intellectual side of our side and sometimes neglect the emotional side of ours, which is a very important part of us as well. The healthy part of us will say, I need to look at both sides. And when we go through a tragedy, we need to say, hey, I feel sorrowful, I feel angry, I feel helpless. I feel those things because that's a very important part of ourselves. Unfortunately, some of us men may not be as well trained at dealing with some of these in a constructive way. And this is a really good way for us to open up with each other and grow. So anyway, I'm going to get out of the way and let's just have some time to share with one another and minister to each other with what's going on this week. And after a little while, maybe we'll look at some scriptures and stuff.
I thought maybe I'd start it off by sharing a couple thoughts and looking at a couple of scriptures. You know, I'm sure that all of us were, in one way or another, riveted on Tuesday at work. We had the advantage of having CNN on at work, and I walked out into the plant thinking that I was actually going to get something done, and then walked into the department where normally there's 8 or 10 guys work and women working, and found everybody in the back room huddled around the television set. There was only one guy in charge. We put the place on autopilot and just kind of... But anyway, we were riveted to the television. There wasn't too much discussion. There was only a few subdued comments here and there. Everyone was just in shock. And one of the things that stands out in my mind that I remember from Tuesday was after that, sometime before noon, walking out, knowing that they had grounded all the planes. I work right across the river from downtown, so we always have flights coming in from landing at Lambert. They line up, they kind of fly right over us, just north of us, downtown, and then head into for a landing. So I stood out there and watched a couple of Southwest flights and a couple of TWA flights coming in for a landing, and then watched them fly past downtown, because I have this beautiful view of downtown as I stand there. And just, I thought to myself, things have changed. Nothing is ever going to be the same. And that was probably one of the biggest feelings that I had as I went through the day and went home, that nothing is ever going to be the same anymore. We're just plunged into, and maybe the biggest thing on my mind was high gas prices and fear of watching these planes. So anyway, then as I thought about it over the week, why don't you turn to Psalm 83. So unique about about this psalm was, as I read through it, it seemed to capture a lot of the emotions that I was feeling. Was this one? It wasn't even written by David. It was written by Asaph, or one of his descendants. You know, my first was shock and outrage. How dare they do this? You know, who are these people? And what in the world do they think? But then, as I started reading Psalm 83, let me just see if I can get oriented here. I'll just read little parts of it, and then, O God, do not keep silent. Be not quiet, O God, be not still. See how your enemies are astir, how your foes rear their head. With cunning they conspire against your people. They plot against those you cherish. Come, they say, let us destroy them as a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. So I got to, I was thinking about fear and uncertainty, especially as I was watching those planes. Not that I really expected one of those planes to veer and crash into downtown St. Louis, but I had never, ever, in all the years that I've watched planes land, ever think that one of them would veer sideways and crash into something. And wondering, who's next? What's next? You know, what is coming up? And it just hit me here. With one mind, they plot together. They form an alliance against you. There they are. They're out there. They're plotting against us. And then, anger and hatred. I've heard a lot of that even as people speak on TV. They use the words, we're going to hunt them down. Even our leaders are using that. And I don't know whether there's really hatred in their voices when they use that, but even our Secretary of State said we're going to rip them off the face of the earth. Maybe not quite those exact words, but we're going to hunt them out and tear them down. And so here, just if you jump down to verse 9, do to them, this is, I guess, speaking, begging God to do to them as you did to Midian, as you did to Sisera and Jabin. Make their nobles like all these people there. Take back possession. And here they are, we're saying, hunt them down, rip them out. But then, two of the emotions that I felt this week that probably were the hardest for me to admit are kind of expressed in 17 and 18. May they ever be ashamed and dismayed. May they perish in disgrace. Let them know that you, whose name is the Lord, that you alone are most high above all the earth. And what I've been kind of struggling with is doubt and unbelief. And thinking, well great, here I am praying to God that they be destroyed, that they may perish in disgrace, and that they know who is the Lord. And yet, in my mind, I'm envisioning the people who did this praying the same prayer to their God. And just struggling with, why are we both responding to this by praying to our God that the other side be perished in disgrace so that we know who's God is? That's really hard for me. But anyway, I decided, or at least I think, that the answer may lie in the fact that earlier on I said that nothing will ever be the same, but in reality, nothing has really changed at all. If you turn over to Psalm, I'm sorry.
And then you go ahead and finish.
Sure.
I don't want us to dominate, because it's kind of a sharing time. But that would be a good way to get started.
Well, nothing's changed.
Thank you, Al. Sorry, I'm not.
No, go ahead.
Thing that's on your heart you guys want to talk about?
The very first thing I thought about was my brother who worked right there, not in the World Trade Center, but until, I think it's 3 years ago, his building is backed up against the hotel that they're talking about being destroyed on the news. My mother called me and told me that his building faced the World Trade Center, and I, for the longest time, couldn't picture that, and I finally talked to him yesterday, and now the building faced the other way. I just thought about the amount of time I spent in that about how different it is now. I guess the first thing I thought of was I could have been on the observation deck. I could have been visiting, and I thought of all the people who were visiting or who had their first day of work that Tuesday, or who had their last day of work Tuesday, or, you know, just, so I just kept, I guess I needed to make it very personal. I just kept thinking about all those people sitting and drinking coffee and starting their day. I thought about when I've worked for big companies, sitting and drinking my coffee and starting my day, and just how that would have been so unbelievable. I've been in email touch with someone who was on a train and saw everything happen, and she said that everyone went to work. They saw the first tower on fire. They saw the plane crash into the second tower. They watched it all happen. They all talked on their cell phones to people right after it happened, and they all got off the train and got on their subway and went to work because they were still in shock, I guess. She doesn't even know now. You know, she worked in Lower Manhattan, and it took her. She got to work and stayed at work for 2 hours and then spent the next 5 or 6 hours trying to get home back to New Jersey. And I'm in a much better place than I was just yesterday. I've been kind of despairing, knowing that God is always in control, and clinging to that, but not knowing anything else. And not really knowing what that means. Thinking about someone that we know who is a missionary, who was attacked and raped, and how she just clung to that. God is in control. I'm here doing God's work. But beyond that, God being in control doesn't mean that we're not going to be killed or hurt. And that something I've grappled with for several years now, and I've definitely been struggling with that the last, is it 9 or 5 days? What does it mean? Yes, God's in control, He's sovereign, and the amazing things I've seen come out of this, the way that this whole country, that people who probably haven't been to church in years or have never been to church are probably preparing to go to church right now or at a church. And people who haven't talked to God in years have been praying. And just thinking about how God can use anything. And I've heard very little. I'm in a chat room, and I've heard a lot of discussion of God. I've heard very little, God doesn't love us, and where is He? Virtually none, which I would expect at a time like this. You know, clearly God doesn't love us if 5,000 people can be killed like this. And I, you know, not that I'm saying that, I'm saying some people, it just seems to me that people would think that, and I haven't experienced much of that. I've experienced a lot of God does love us, but we need God, but we don't know, you know, a lot of we don't know what that means. Which is very encouraging to me, and all this discouraging. I don't know what any of that means, but that's where I'm at.
Throw in here. I was picturing myself if I was on one of those airplanes, knowing that this airplane's going down. I may not even know that. I could say I was on that last flight, and I know, okay, I'm going to die. Get over that initial shock and realize, okay, I feel good about my salvation. God, please have mercy on me. But who's going to take care of my kids, man? You know, if Julie went on that flight, she's going to take care of these kids. And I'd be praying, and I want that Mid-County Church of Christ would see my little girls and say, yeah, we're not just going to give you a meal this week, but we're going to care about you all the way, emotionally, nothing else. I got life insurance and all that stuff, and I don't care about that. I care about their emotional and their spiritual needs for the next 10 or 15 years. not caring. I'm thinking, if I would know, yeah, I'm in County Church of Christ, is going to be caring about my two kids for the next 10, 15 years, then I'd say, okay, I'm going to die a whole lot more peacefully right now. And I know Julie could probably make it without me, with, you know, but my girls, man, they don't understand. I know Julie's going to struggle, going through her struggles, and she's going to need you too, but, you know, so that's one thing that was on my heart. If I know for sure that there's a family of God, which I know there is, at Mid County, I think, and I don't know, those some of the other people who are dying with their kids, not knowing that, that's, you know, not knowing that it's just you, but the people you're leaving behind, those helpless people. So anyway, that's just one thing I thought about. Having a church, and I hope, like you were saying, a lot of people go back to a church, not just any church, a forum, God, but a church of believers like Acts 2, where people are committed to one another, and they're going to take care of, like in the first century when there were murderers and all kinds of people killing Christians right and left. They knew that, hey, your family's going to be taken care of because the church is there. You know, that's important. Something I thought a lot about.
For me, I've been, I guess, kind of blessed in that when I was a teenager, I spent a lot of time just looking at life around me and trying to decide why things are the way they are, and developed a fairly strong personal, I guess, theology about free will and why God lets people do bad stuff to each other, because otherwise we'd just be robots. I mean, we have to have the power to hurt in order to also have the power to do beautiful things and help. Stuff like the people on the last flight to storm the cabin to save people on the ground. But Romans 8, two different sections of it, for two very different reasons, provide a whole lot of comfort for me. Starting in verse 18, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. The creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed. For the creation is subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up until the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? But we hope for what we do not yet have. We wait for it patiently. And then also a little bit later, down in 28. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son. A bunch of salvation stuff. But then also, down in 31. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? He did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? It is God who justifies. Who is he that condemns? Jesus Christ who died. More than that, who was raised to life, is at the right hand of God and is also interceding for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, for your sake we face death all day long. We are considered as sheep to be slaughtered. No, in all these things we were more than conquerors through him who loves us. For I am convinced neither life nor death, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. There's two really different important threads to me here. And the first one is that, yes, we don't live in a perfect world. We live in a world that's flawed, it has pain, it has suffering. But it has that pain and suffering in this world so that we can go through this world and those that seek God can be found. And through our free will, through our free choice, through striving to be like God in that image he made us of himself, we can strive for good, we can grow for good, and look forward to that future time when life will be perfect, when we will be with God in heaven, when there will be no pain or suffering or death. And he's with us all this time, even in the darkest of times. He is there, and he is our God. That gives me a lot of comfort. This is all just transient nothingness.
Jason, since you're a programmer like me, and kind of a very much a left brain,
yeah.
Tell me some of the feelings that went through your head. It just told us a lot of the analysis, the long-term picture, that's good. Tell us some of the feelings.
The first day I thought I was feeling a lot of pain and some anger, but the next day, and even next couple days after that, I kept realizing the day before I was feeling more shocked and I was actually feeling anything at all. And how muted my feelings were, because each day that actually became more crystallized and more real, and it all became more. I mean, I felt a little bit of fear for Patty. I didn't really feel much fear for myself, but I felt a little bit of fear for Patty. And although in a lot of ways I thought, I guess my analytical side protected me from this, because I thought that we're in a small town. We're not in that much danger. We're not that big of a target. We don't have a lot of symbolic power to people that look physical to attack. I mean, there's not a lot of really good targets around us. And I don't know many people in, like, New York, so that helped me. I don't have the closest to a brother that Patty does. It's not as real to me. I've been in New York a couple of times, but never extensively. And like I said, the shock numbed me and protected me for a brief few days while it became more real. There's times that were really painful, especially when I'd see something really beautiful, one of the survivors of the lives, or the things about the people on the last flight. The beauty really impacts me almost more than the pain. The pain impacts me too, and it's sad. But, I don't know. It's just a wash of different stuff.
The media really protected us from a lot of gruesome sights. Those fires have to endure. They really color.
One of the most scarring things to me was watching a couple of people, I saw some scenes of people jumping, and just watching them almost flutter to the ground like a piece of paper. It's just scarring. And Dad told me about one couple that jumped hand in hand. That, was it that night or the next night? Dad called. Yeah, that's what I thought. And that was just, that kind of got to me.
One of my brothers was in Honduras. My other brother was in Zurich that week. His family in New York, not New York, in London. In Honduras, they heard that there were 8 planes. And that was all the news they could get. And it wasn't until they talked to my mother that they found out.
What's going through your head this week?
Well, a lot of it, last Sunday I was watching the football game. The Rams and the, what are they playing last? I don't remember. The Eagles, goodness. And they break off their commercial on the series of shows that are going to be on the coming season, I guess, start the news. And they're just totally immoral, filth. And I think to myself, how long is God going to put up with that?
Say again, Mike, how long?
How long is God going to put up with that? This country is immoral as it is. I mean, there's a lot of good quality people here, don't get me wrong. A lot of thousands of people suffer unrighteously. You know, but it says in the Bible clearly that the righteous will suffer along with the unrighteous, and God's wrath comes. You know, the Philistines, God allowed, took them to the promised land, took over certain areas, but then they began to sin. And God sent the enemy. It wasn't God's person. But he used them to make Israel suffer. I think there's a lot of that going on. You know, God's in control. He could have stopped that from happening. He allowed it to happen. And it just, you know, I work in a few hundred people, and there's good quality people there, but there's also a lot of, just in society in general, just a lot of people I just can't stand being around. And really, we really, as a nation, need to repent. And ask for God's blessing. And then they sold the Congress singing God Bless America. I'm thinking, do some of them even know what they're talking about? Do they even know God at all? And it just made me cringe and thinking, man. At one point, it looks beautiful. At another point, it just makes me kind of hypocritical that they would even be out there singing it. They even know what they're singing about. And that's just my view on it. I could go on talking. I could bow, so I could spend a couple hours sharing our feelings. But, you know, I think this is hopefully bring better things out in us and a lot of other people. You know, they're really hopefully they'll get some soul searching going on. Because you've been hearing now in the news people talking about. And other folks have taught, we need to understand our enemy. You know, after World War II, we helped Germany and Japan, and it became probably one of our strongest allies. And we really need to get in the heart and minds of those people, why they really hate us. And that's just such a dicey issue. There's so many ways you could look at that, because of Israel and the Palestine, all that conflict in there. I'm not even going into all that analogy. But I know a lot of people don't like hearing that, you know, because it's casting blame, and this raises the time for blame casting. It's a time for, you know, time for prayer. But later on, if you have anybody has time this week, Obadiah kind of is a book that kind of goes over some of those same feelings and issues. I'm not going to read it now. I'm going to read that some other time. But that's all I have to say right now.
I can certainly identify with what you're saying, though. As I got to try thinking it through a biblical filter as opposed to an American filter, you know, as a citizen of the kingdom, you start reading through the prophets, you start reading through the Psalms, you read Isaiah, you read Joel, you read all of the troubles that Israel had and how the sovereignty of God and even destruction that came upon Israel is attributed to God's plan. And I think you're right that it probably is too much a time of pain, and that there is too much shock and too much trauma, and you know, maybe prayer is a better response than to say too much about that. And yeah, I don't know when the right time is. There is definitely a wake-up call in all of this. And you can even see the same kind of response in the Old Testament where people turn to God in their time of need, but it didn't lead to a changed lifestyle, a morality change, a change in the way they treated other people. And so I'm thinking about all of that in light of my own. Okay, let me look at myself first. Let's start there. And that's, you know, how much have I just bought into the society around it? So I think there's been a lot of kind of processing of that just in terms of my own heart. And then trying to figure out, I mean, like you, how could the level of hate, if that's what it is, be so high to cause these guys to do that? And to what degree is there some, do we need to look at ourselves and being, I mean, I've been around the world in enough different countries to know that for the most part, Americans are held very high and sort of resented at the same time. So that's kind of an intriguing combination. And trying to work through all that. To what degree is our own pride or oppression of other peoples or is this about economics and oil and money? You know, what are the issues at root in all this? And there's a lot of different theories on trying to understand it. But just to recognize that level of just how much we're despised, and to not do some real soul searching in terms of
why, I think, is to miss it. So, rather random thoughts there, but say I think you do go as he's been as the sadness for the victims, and yet I think maybe for me it's the anxiety of going forward and not wanting to presume that we're the good guys, and yet to not to make some type of response we know is not appropriate. And so how does God give us the wisdom and all of that to proceed? And I have a certain pessimism that it's going to actually, from a physical, economic perspective, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't think this is something that's going to be taken care of, like we're talking about. I just think that it could escalate many, many different levels in many different ways. That it could become another Israel, Palestinian kind of affair, but only with the United States against the Middle Eastern or Islamic countries.
Government that lets us do a lot of individual things, and we like that. But I don't know, we've gotten very far from that concept, and it's a concept I've been thinking about for a couple of years now. And I think about it in terms of church, too. I don't know how much we have a sense of belonging to the church as much as getting together with like-minded people, which is a very different concept. And it's going to be very interesting to watch how America responds and deals with, because I think that you're going to see a lot of, well, I'm not the American that did these bad things that they're perceiving, so why am I being hurt? And that's how we see ourselves.
I can relate to the independence. I had attributed, for me, relative to being a Christian, because I've been surprised by the nationalism. In other words, singing God Bless America, and people want to go outside of our building on Park 270 and hold hands, and that side of kind of coming together as America and waving the flag feels a little foreign to me, frankly, but it seems to be very comfortable for lots of people. So I guess I've been surprised by the sense of patriotism that a lot of folks do, and not quite sure what to do with it personally. Sense.
Yeah.
What's Duane thinking over there? You've been real quiet. I'm curious.
Oh, I have, similar thoughts that everyone else has already articulated. And that I would say right away, I have this, I don't know what it is, this strangeness about me, but one of the things that I immediately thought of when I was there, people came around knocking on my door going, did you hear? And my response is, not to do anything, not to think anything, not to let everything, to let the events unfold. And I know that probably turned several people off because I didn't go turn on the radio, I stayed away from the television. My response is, let everything unfold. My second response was, I want to be there. Because I'd rather be there than just hearing about it or watching it or whatever. I like to act and be in the middle of things like that. My thought was when, we had a prayer service at 12 o'clock, and there were a couple that were occurring at the medical school, and I was just going, this doesn't feel right.
Prayer service was at the medical
school? It just didn't feel right, because it was like, and I was thinking this thing of, Israel, evil happens and we run to God. But as long as things are good, We go about our merry way. So, I mean, I was really torn, you know, from wanting to participate in the patriotism and nationalism and wanting to be a part of the community and thinking that this is a great opportunity to reach out and people are calling on the name of God. And at the same time, I'm going, but, you know, we're only doing this because we think the world is caving in on us. You know, it's a bad time. And, you know, and so I just had all these mixed emotions throughout the week from thinking of this as a wonderful opportunity and that God can make amazing things happen out of what appears to be a tremendous disaster. And at the same time, feeling very much from an American, I guess, my American side, feeling hypocritical that we're only doing this because in L.A. we had three disasters over the course of 1 year, and we had the Rodney King beatings in April, the riots that followed from that. We had tremendous flooding, which was a national disaster that September, and then on January 13th of 1994, 31st of 1994, we had the earthquake in Northridge. And so all of that happened within an 8-month span. And so people were filling the churches. I mean, we had more visitors than anything. But then we go back to our old ways. And it's like, wake up, you know? I mean, so anyway, I have these mixed emotions, and I'm still processing those things. I cried several times this week because of the stories of those who lost people. And our technology is wonderful, right? Because now you can have your cell phone on the 105th floor and give a, you know, detailed account. Well, I can't go below. I keep going up, and I've gone as far as I can go, and there's no other place for me to go. And, you know, they're talking to their spouse or to a brother, and they're saying, please take care of my wife and my kid. I mean, you know, I cried several times. I mean, literally, just cried. But that, to me, is just the saddest thing. Mixed emotions. Mixed feelings.
Can I ask you a question? This isn't... put this. A lot of you feel that this is... I guess God allowed this to happen, or seems to me that I'm hearing that you feel that God allowed this to happen to punish us for evil. And I guess I feel that that kind of treatment was part of an experiment God did with the Israelite nation in the Old Testament to prove that we can't earn redemption and salvation and God's favor, that God's favor can only come through grace. And I guess I see this purely as an act of man, not as an act of God. God allowed it to happen, but God allowed it to happen because God allows us the full range of good and evil. God allows us acts of utter beauty and acts of utter depravity. And I think it is dangerous thinking of us like Israel, of a favored nation. I think we're no greater than Ecuador, we're no greater than anything. And I'm just wondering if... I don't know if it's any reactions to that.
Well, personally, I always feel that we should not compare ourselves to Israel. I think too often the American civil religion is such that we think of ourselves as being blessed, especially by God. And I think that is a tremendous fallacy. So for me, that is not the case. The point being, though, is that any nation or any group of people that suffer, it seems that we then turn to God, like the Israelites did. And without necessarily, I mean, and it's an opportunity for us as Christians, I think, to reach out to those people.
Thank you.
But at the same time, though, it's one of those things that I think we do and have done for eons of time.
Okay.
It's during bad times we turn to God, and during good times we ignore
Him. It's an emotional thing, not a logical thing.
So we are very much like the Israelites.
Well, fun for me, the history. I was reading through Jeremiah this last couple of weeks as I'm putting together a lesson on it, and just seeing the perspective of history, not that we are Israel, but there are some parallels, you know, and I think you have to be careful to equate us with Israel. Certainly we're not, but just to see what happened, and what happened after, during Jeremiah's time was the fall of Jerusalem was destroyed, the temple was torn up, and, you know, it's like, the end of God, you know? And of course it wasn't. He still had a remnant, he still had his plan, and we're living the fruits of that today. And so for me, Tuesday, it was like, you know, this is really scary, and you start wondering, well, is the United States going to be no more after a while if these sorts of things keep happening? And after a while thinking, but damn, it's okay, God will still keep going on. No
God
matter.
Will always be there.
Yeah, and not only that, but his plan will unfold regardless of what's destroyed and what's not. And that's not to say that it's not terrible what happened, but it's comforting to me to know that he's still in control. Like Patty said, his plan is still unfolding as he wanted it to.
See, that was my reaction in terms of letting events unfold on Tuesday. Because, I mean, we had people who, you know, people were crying and things like that. It's like the world is coming to an end. And it's like, well, you know, God is in control. And I have that sincere belief. So nothing can shake that, I think. So I was not fazed by it. I said, let's just wait and see all that happens. And let's make sure that we have all the facts. And then we can make some assessments, you know. I mean, I was not going to allow myself to get totally distraught by the events.
I was so glad we didn't have a knee-jerk reaction to.
Oh.
As a nation. That was my biggest prayer the first day.
Well, there's been a few knee-jerk reactions as a nation,
So one of the things that we're going to do, for example, we have an Iranian family across the street from us, and we're inviting them over to dinner because we feel that this is a good way and a good time for us to reach out to our Muslim neighbors and show them God's love. To me, that's an opportunity.
Right. That's a good point. We're very glad to see online a lot of some places I hang out. A lot of people just mentioning that just like there's a whole lot of differences among fundamental Christianity, there's also a whole lot of differences among fundamental Islam. And a lot of people believe that what they're doing, they're not getting an automatic ticket to heaven, they're getting an automatic ticket to their equivalent of hell because suicide is just completely wrong under their religion, stuff like that. So there's that, they don't all believe what the few militants believe. And that jihad is to be used only in defense of the faith and all sorts of good stuff to point out.
Gerald, since you kind of scroll down, will you leave us in a closing prayer?
Okay. Father in heaven, we come to you in the name of Jesus, and this is one of those times that I don't know exactly what to pray, so I pray that you'll pray with us with your Holy Spirit as you promised you would. Thank you that we know that you're in control. Thank you that we know that you can affect events. I don't always know when you do and when you don't, but I know that you're there. We know that you're there, and I pray that you'll bless all of us in all of this, and ultimately, Father, all things for your glory. Jesus.